Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Bitcoin, which is a cryptocurrency and also fast becoming a widely accepted digital payment system. So there has been a lot of interest in Bitcoin. A lot of people want to find out what exactly Bitcoin is and should they be investing in Bitcoin or should they be using it for transactions and associated topics. So to clear all these things up and to make Bitcoin simple for lay people, we have a couple of Bitcoin experts.
One is not even close.
Yeah, one is our product guy. That's Akhil Colombowala.
Hello.
And we also have the CTO of NDTV Convergence. That's Kavaljeet Pedi.
Hi.
And I'm your host, Pranay Parab. So before we begin this episode, we should confess that we are not giving financial advice here. Don't use this as advice on whether you should buy Bitcoin or sell Bitcoin or get into it. This is just a primer on what Bitcoin is, and we are clearing the most commonly asked questions. Now, we've done this to through some articles on gadgets360.com, and we'll be putting links to those in the show notes. But if you'd rather have a primer in 30 minutes on what Bitcoin is and why there is so much interest in it and whether you should be looking at this as something that's going to be viable to buy and sell things in India, then this is a good explainer
or,
for you.
Or is it a good investment tool?
Yeah. But please, once again, I cannot state this explicitly enough. Do not use this as financial advice because this is a very volatile currency and the value may shoot down to zero tomorrow. There is no guarantee and it may shoot down to something like 10,000% higher than what it is today. So do not use this as financial advice. Just use this as an explainer on what Bitcoin is. All right. So first, we should start by maybe giving a primer on what currency is itself, even if it's a bit of a, say, let's just say a technical slash boring topic. But I think before we get into Bitcoin itself, we should talk about how currencies work.
Yeah, maybe just 5 minutes to explain the background to this. So, and please, all the economists who are reading this, please do not shoot us bad mails.
Listening to this.
Yeah. So just to begin, like, just going back, what was currency, right? So people used to barter, and I'm saying thousands of years ago, they would barter. Someone would have grains, they would exchange it for wheat, which could get exchanged for goats, cattle. So people used to barter, and of course, it's not a good way to run economy using barter. So problem with durability, portability, division, you know, how do you give half a cow for grains, right? So that was a problem which was solved by using rare and precious metals. So that became the thing that gold was rare. So anyone who could mine gold would use it in exchange for, let's say, cattle. And then someone who had silver, which was slightly easier to find, which would have lower value, could use it for, let's say, grains. And then copper was even easier to find. So that became the standard of or the currency of that point where rare metals was used for trading. And because these metals could be broken down, they could be melted and smaller coins could be made. So, you know, because of the weight, they had smaller denominations and you could basically divide these precious metals. But the problem with all this was that, you know, how do you store them? There was security risk. If someone would steal it, you would lose all your gold. So then came goldsmiths who would take the gold or the precious metal that you had and give you receipts for it. So that became the thing then. So you would say that I have, let's say, 1 kg of gold, which is equal to, you know, 1,000 receipts that you could exchange with other people who had receipts. And that became the currency. And that's where, you know, everything started, where these receipts and these goldsmiths actually became like banks and currency notes, which was measured against the gold that was kept with these banks / goldsmiths. So I think that's where the term gold standard came in, where, you know, you how rich you were against how much gold you kept in the banks, and the banks would use that gold for other things. So not going into the economics of this, but this is how currency used to work till maybe 100 years ago, where it all changed and something called fiat money came in. So fiat actually is maybe a Latin word, which actually means that it has really no value, just use as you please. But what happened was fiat money basically was just paper, and a central authority like the government would say, this is a note which says 100, and the 100 means this is the value. So basically no intrinsic value except that someone of authority would say what its value is and the society would agree with it. And this is actually how current modern currency and money works, that if all countries including India uses fiat money, where in India, let's say an RBI or the central monetary body would say how much is money, and that's how it works. Now, the problem with that is, I mean, there are many problems. So with current way of how currency is used, but two of them is inflation and actually exchange. So inflation actually, like typically when you talk about inflation, people would say, you know, every year the price of, let's say, rice is going up or commodities are going up. So that's inflation. So the other way to look at it is that every year your money cannot buy as much as it could the previous year. So the value of money is reducing. So that's inflation. And how does inflation work? That more money is introduced into the economy. And this is done at a very slow and steady rate. So more money comes in and your value of your money in the bank or what you hold actually keeps going down. So what is happening is there is a inflation in the economy, which is actually in some ways a good thing. The more the inflation, and it shouldn't be too much, that's hyperinflation, that's a big problem. But a small inflation actually promotes economics. There's more trading done because of that. So again, not going into the deeper economics of it, but this is how currency works today. Now, the problem with that is that when you have to exchange money with foreign countries, then their exchange rates come in, and then when you transfer the money to someone else, then there are central authorities who will take a small bit of transaction fee for doing this exchange, and then there is dollar, which is the US dollar, which is actually seen as like the default currency, and everyone is measured against them. So there are many ways of looking at how foreign exchange works and how transfers are done between countries. What is the value of currency? So this is how currency has been being done over the years. And the two or three big problems with currency has always been this. So how do you exchange between countries? How do you make sure the person who is receiving the money is the genuine person when these exchanges are done? How do you make sure the poor who may not have bank accounts can also do this? So, you know, I think the current government started this whole Jan Dhan Yojana to get more poor people to have bank accounts, because once you have a bank account, you can do more trades. You don't have to physically hand over cash. You can do it through the banking system. So all this comes around currency and money, that most governments around the world have been doing it for 100 or maybe close to 100 years. So now coming to Bitcoin, then what is Bitcoin and what's a virtual currency? Maybe Akhil, you can pick it up from there.
So like Kawaljeet said, Bitcoin is the absolute opposite of what a fiat currency is. Bitcoin is decentralized. So it was one of the first non-fiat currencies. And Bitcoin
actually,
solved
in a way, it's a fiat currency where the value of the currency is actually people think the value is, right?
Yeah, but it's not regulated by anyone.
Yeah,
like,
so there's no central authority saying what is the value.
Yeah.
The people are deciding.
Everyone, the world decides, the network decides what the value of the currency becomes. And the more people who accept it, the value increases and appreciates. So it solved one of the first problems for a digital, purely digital currency, which was how to avoid double spending, which was very impossible to do without a centralized system which keeps records of everything. And at that point, I think there was someone known as DigiCash which was trying this and failing spectacularly. Right. So Bitcoin was the first one to solve this problem using this novel blockchain method.
Yeah, actually, just to now explain this whole blockchain and the ledger thing that you may have heard about. So the way current currency works is that if I have to give money to a friend, one way to do this is through cash. So I can just give him money, he can take the cash and go, right? So there is no ledger being maintained, no one has to prove anything to anyone. It's an exchange between two parties. But the most important bit here is that they have to be physically close to each other.
Correct,
to give the cash. Now, that obviously doesn't work in today's day and age. Not everyone is physically close to each other. And many trades are done over electronic lines like phones or internet. So how does someone prove that money was transferred? So to do that, you need these central authorities like banks or credit card companies who actually maintain a ledger. So when I transfer money to Akhil, I tell Akhil that I have transferred 100 rupees. Akhil can check he has got 100 rupees, but if he disputes that, I can always go to this central authority through which I transferred the money to prove that this transaction happened.
Correct.
So
because
this is
there's always records.
Yeah, so that's
happened.
The ledger that the central authority is maintaining.
Correct.
The big difference in Bitcoin is that the ledger is not maintained by your central authority. Like Akhil says, it's decentralized. So who maintains it? It's hundreds and thousands of people who have a copy of all the transactions being done on Bitcoins. So every transaction is recorded. This record on everyone's computer who actually is managing this is called a ledger. And Ledger's technical word, which is the big buzzword these days, is a blockchain. So blockchain is basically a ledger of all the transactions that Bitcoin... Yeah.
Ever since the network started back in 2010 or 11.
Right.
Till
so,
now.
So that's the big deal about Bitcoin. Because it's a decentralized method, the ledger is actually... Every transaction that has happened on Bitcoins, every buy, every sell since it was incepted in 2011. And the other big deal about Bitcoins is because it's decentralized. Everyone who wants to manage a ledger can feel free to do that.
Just download and the client. Let
just download
it sync
the client,
up with the network.
You will get the 45 GB. I don't know.
No, it's 130.
130 GB of transactions that you have to download. That's the total ledger of all the transactions that has happened.
Yeah, so the Bitcoin thing, I think, it started in 2009. It was created by, according to Wikipedia,
Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yeah, an unknown person or group of people under the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. As Akhil said, nobody knows who these people or this person
anonymous.
Is.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's with good reason. So.
Yeah, there have been multiple reports where like random people have been tracked down. And
Famously, Newsweek did a doxing of some... Poor Satoshi Nakamoto in California, Los Angeles, and it turns out he was not the guy. So it's still not known who he is. Apparently, he has a million bitcoins with him.
Yeah, I think about a lot.
That in today's day translates to around $8 billion. But he has never shown up. Nor has he ever sold a single bitcoin because that can be tracked through these decentralized ledgers because they know it's being held by one person, but there's no activity on that.
Yeah.
But I think the important point to remember on Bitcoins is that why has Bitcoin taken off? Mm. So like I explained, the currency that we use today has these two, three big problems, which is the exchange rate first.
Mm.
So since Bitcoin in a way is a global currency, the exchange rate is the same. So if it is at $8,000 today, it will be $8,000 in US also, in India also. Of course, there may be some... difference because of the trade that happens. So someone may say, I want to sell it at $8,100 or $7,900 because he wants to get rid or buy more bitcoins. But certainly the price fluctuates globally together. It's not that one country can have a different rate.
Yeah.
The second is when you actually give or take bitcoins, there is no transaction fee because there's no central authority sitting who has to maintain a ledger. And for that, they normally charge a fee. So like banks or credit cards today charge a small fee every time a transaction is done. Bitcoins don't have transaction fee because it's being decentralized and everyone maintains it. There is actually a possibility of transaction fees coming in because the people who maintain these ledgers and the people who actually download this 145 GB file to do this, they are actually called miners. And because it's a podcast, we have to clarify that miners here is M-I-N-E-R-S, like someone who goes into a mine, and not like young people like M-I-N-O-R-S.
Yeah. So I mean, we had to clarify it because, you know, podcasts could get illegal really fast.
So these miners are people who volunteer to maintain the ledger. And today, when they maintain the ledger, they get a small chunk of reward by actually getting a new Bitcoin when they mine enough of these transactions. But Bitcoins, because it's not a fiat currency, there is a fixed number of Bitcoins that are totally available. And again, this is all maths, right? So Satoshi Nakamoto actually put a hard limit that there will only be 21 million Bitcoins over its lifespan. And I think 12 million have already been spent.
I think it will be 21 million in 2070.
Yeah, by the maths. Yeah.
2017 or 27?
2070.
2070. Okay.
That's when it will hit. Yeah.
So what happens is that at over time, when no more Bitcoins are being released, these miners will be rewarded by giving them a small transaction fee for maintaining it. And these transaction fees will actually still be lower than a central authority managing it because... Again, you can imagine there's not one company which has to do it. It's hundreds and thousands of miners, so it just gets divided between them. So each miner actually gets only a small portion.
And it's the actual essence of peer-to-peer. People are maintaining this on their own.
Yeah.
In exchange for a small reward somewhere down the line.
Something funny. So someone compared Bitcoins and regular currency as Napster and torrents.
Yeah.
So Napster was a central authority managing music, and that's like banks and torrent. It's like Bitcoin, which is peer-to-peer and managed by many people.
Right. So you know which one survived. So it's not financial advice. Just saying.
So which one is the cockroach and which one is the eagle?
All right. So I'll get to the meat of the podcast, which is why are we talking about this now? So I think in January 2017, the value of Bitcoin, according to this random chart, which I found via Google was around 70,000 rupees. Yeah.
About 900 something dollars, I believe. 970 or something.
Yes. Yeah. So one Bitcoin hit like 1 lakh rupees somewhere around May 2017. Mm-hmm. And now it's November 23rd. And currently the value is sitting at something like 5,34,000.
Yeah.
So if you were smart enough, unlike us,
yeah.
if you unlike had all bought of us. Bitcoin before January, then by now your value, the value of the Bitcoin you had would actually be like at least 5x, if yeah. not more, depending on when you bought
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but maybe by the time this podcast is out, it could be down to 1 lakh.
Yeah.
So again, please don't take financial advice from us, yeah. but this is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is beyond our control. This has actually been fluctuating. Yeah. If you just see the graph of Bitcoin over the years.
It's a very volatile digital asset. It's gone up. In the past, you know, to $500 and then gone back down to $20.
Yeah.
And people have lost a lot of money.
The reason we say that, like, I mean, now that, you know, since we're talking about Bitcoin as an investment, so the reason why people are investing in this is because if you look at traditional means of investment, at least in India, you would do something like an FD, you'd put your money in gold, you'd put your money in mutual funds, you put it in stocks, or you'd do like something risky such as futures trading. So in any of these, you know, the guarantee like over a long term is that you'd probably be making at the most 30%.
Okay, yeah, that's if you're very, very lucky.
Yeah, very, very yeah. lucky, really financially
and
astute.
And that's probably only yeah. mutual funds or stocks.
So. That too, mutual funds even then, like yeah. over a 5-year period, getting 30% plus returns very is very
lucky.
Difficult.
Very
you know, you'd
lucky.
Be stuck yep, closer lucky. To the 20% if you limit if you're lucky. Now, Bitcoin, if you can see, it's already been 500% since January, right? Mm. So the problem here is that it can go like minus 500% also tomorrow. But at the moment, if you were like financially astute enough to invest in it in January, then it has like seriously risen high above what anybody could have expected. So don't want to give financial advice here, but, you know, Bitcoin keeps fluctuating. So, you know, there could be a point like in the next week, next 2 weeks, whatever, where it falls more than 30% or so. And then you can, you know, maybe pick it up at that point. But the problem is that nobody can predict this kind of currency.
I think the next big inflection point may be the case which comes up in the Supreme Court.
In January.
In January 2018.
Yeah.
So some lawyer has filed a PIL to regulate Bitcoins for the fear of that it can be misused for purposes of money laundering or terrorism or black money.
Yeah, and even worse, like Bitcoin, since it is by nature anonymous, you could even be accepting money from somebody who's probably into child porn or something, and that will bring
actually,
up
if anyone
serious...
has heard of Silk Route,
yeah,
which was a big case a couple of years back, yeah. That was like the underground trading place for all kinds of
drugs and
illegal,
whatnot. Yeah.
Illegal trading, but basically used by using Bitcoin as a means of purchasing them.
Yeah.
That got shut down by FBI.
Yeah.
The main guy who was running the exchange was caught.
Yeah. So, like, you need to be, like, aware of this, and which is why, I mean, I personally feel that the Indian government may not want to allow this cryptocurrency to flourish.
Yeah,
because
it also
of
is
fear of
competition
misuse.
For their own currency, right?
Yeah.
For every country in the world.
Yeah. So, but if they come on board and if they regulate it, so then
yeah, actually
that
would be a good point. So, how do you regulate something like this? So, yeah. Currently, that like maybe it's a good segue to say how do you buy or sell Bitcoins, and then we can see how do you regulate it.
Right.
So, yeah. Since Bitcoins can be used both for the purpose of trading, and it can be used for as an investment, so
right.
You have to look at these two means of buying or selling a Bitcoin. So first, in case of actually trading, so can you use your Bitcoin to buy a product? So there are good instances of that happening in US. So companies like Overstock or Dell, even Microsoft for I think Xbox.
They've started expecting.
They accept Bitcoins,
yeah.
And in turn you get whatever is the value.
One
in
of the
dollars.
Most popular gaming platforms called Steam accepts Bitcoin. I think worldwide, even
right.
In India they accept.
So yeah, and these companies in their Indian operation also do it. So I think Dell in India, Steam in India, both may be using, maybe allowing Bitcoins to be used for purchases in India. And
yeah.
I'm sure over time, either if regulations are favorable or if no regulations come, more companies may accept
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I think even Book My Show through one of the exchanges.
So that brings
Unicoin.
Us to exchanges in India. Unicoin is the one that lets you buy movie tickets
yeah.
on Book My Show.
Right.
But I mean, I'm not a financial expert, but if you ask me if you're using Bitcoin for transactions, that's not like the best way to utilize that
yeah,
currency.
Right now, because of the hyper growth in its value. Yeah. Maybe investment is a better way to do it. But
I mean, we have people in our team who were like back in the day, maybe 6 years ago, they mined one full Bitcoin when it did not cost like the electricity of an entire office for 2 weeks to get that. They mined one full Bitcoin, used it on transactions everywhere. And now they're thinking, oh, if I had held on to that, it could have been worth like 6 lakh rupees or something like that.
Right. So there are even even worse cases where someone used like 100 bitcoins for a pizza. And they're like typically like $1 million spent to buy a small gadget.
There was a time on Reddit where people would donate Bitcoin for good comments and donate other forms of cryptocurrency, which has all stopped now looking at how the
because
prices
of,
have gone up.
Because of the growth. So coming back to how do you buy or sell Bitcoin? So there are typically two ways to do it. So one are exchanges and one is marketplace. And we'll put some of these links on the show notes and you can check out on gadget360.com as well. We have done some stories around that. But typically what exchanges do is that they actually manage everything. You can buy from the exchange or you can sell to the exchange your Bitcoin. But they are, since there are no regulations, they are going above board to make sure they are complying with what they think may be the regulation in the future.
Yeah.
Which means they want KYC done before you can buy or sell on those exchanges.
Which means they will ask you for your identification, PAN card, Aadhaar card.
Which also
proof.
Means that they're linking a person to actually buying Bitcoin.
Bitcoin,
Which in some ways defeats the purpose of Bitcoin because Bitcoin. It was supposed to be anonymous. But that's a good way for you to get into it today if you want to.
You're also paying taxes on these Bitcoins, which is also a negative point.
Yeah, basically what these people are doing is when you buy Bitcoin, they charge you a transaction fee, which is basically their cut for running an exchange. They have operational costs and they want to make a profit.
Which is fine, which is an understandable cost.
Yeah, and above that, they charge you, I think, 18% GST.
Which
may be 18% on the transaction cost, not actually the total amount.
Not on the Bitcoin. So, for example, if you're buying Bitcoin worth some 1,000 rupees, the transaction fee they are charging maybe 100 rupees.
It will be much less.
Let's say it's 1 rupee. Then you pay 18 paisa as transaction.
Yeah, if it's 1 rupees, 18 paisa. If it's 10 rupees, it is 1.8 rupee as taxes. So, tax is not a huge amount here.
But they're complying with... The point is that they are above board right now. They are being compliant. They're making sure everything is in white.
Yeah,
and they are
trying their best to ensure that when these regulations kick in, if at all, they are not caught
because
in a position.
Because they're a business at the end of the day, right? Yeah. So they are accountable for what they do. Yeah.
So
the other method is actually what is a marketplace.
Right.
So the common way to actually trade Bitcoins would be if you could do peer-to-peer, right? So if you know that other person, you can say, give me cash or whatever you want to exchange it for. You could say, I will give you X amount of Bitcoins directly. So you just take the address of this other guy and you can transfer it. But certainly, if you wanted to do that, you could have done through cash and many other means.
Yeah.
The real value comes in if you could do it peer-to-peer around the world.
Right.
And for that comes another way of doing it, which is called a marketplace. Right. And a good one at that we have covered is called localbitcoins.com.
Yeah. Correct.
I think it's an international site, not
it's
an Indian.
It's a global site.
Yeah, but you can see Bitcoin value in Indian rupees.
It works in most major countries.
Yeah. And when you log on to it in India, you will see all the people who are exchanging are Indians.
Correct.
Because what happens is when you log on to a site like that, you will see, so that's almost like an auction site. So if you think about it, when it's peer to peer, someone is saying, I want to sell Bitcoin at this price. Is there anyone who wants to buy it? So he's auctioning it and the lowest bidder comes on top. And some people may be saying, we want to buy it at this price. Is anyone ready to sell it at this price?
Correct.
So when that transaction has to be done, what you do is you agree to it. And you say to that person, okay, I'm ready to buy it at this price that you want to sell it at. And then local Bitcoins acts as an escrow where they will hold the Bitcoin from the seller and they will ask you to send money directly to the buyer or vice versa. They will hold the Bitcoin from the buyer and the cash from the seller. And once you have transferred the money to the seller of the Bitcoin, you tell the seller now to release the Bitcoins from the escrow account. If the if the seller refuses to do it, you can go to local Bitcoins and say, I've already transferred the money. Here is the proof. And they are also allowed to release those Bitcoins if they're convinced. So it's little tricky because it's through an escrow, but most of the trades have been fair. We don't see too many complaints.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the other way to do.
Yeah,
trading.
But once again, this is not an endorsement of this
of
service.
Course,
yeah.
Yeah, there are many more like local Bitcoins.
There's
but
a few subreddits where people exchange Bitcoin with each other, which is how it's been happening for all these
conceptually,
years.
Conceptually, these are the two ways.
Yeah.
So, or maybe we should say three ways. So you can do it through a marketplace. You can do it through an exchange, or right. you, if you know the person, you can do right. it directly peer-to-peer.
Yeah, correct. So before we wrap up this episode, there's one more thing to talk about, and that is the risks in having Bitcoin. So the most important risk which I came across, and I've only just started reading about this, is that there are two ways to store Bitcoin. One is online and the other is offline.
Right.
So when you store it online, which is when you buy it through an exchange, such as a Coinbase or maybe...
Or any online wallet yeah. service. Yeah. Which there are many.
Actually, so one term that you may hear often is a Bitcoin wallet. Yeah. So wallet is actually in a way your bank account.
Correct.
So when yeah. you actually buy or sell Bitcoins, they are kept or withdrawn from your wallet.
Yeah.
And that's where Pranay was saying comes in, that where is the wallet? Is it online on an exchange?
Yeah.
Or is it offline on your own computer?
Yeah. So yeah. when it's on an exchange, it means that if the exchange gets compromised,
yeah.
then your money is at risk.
Correct. Which has why, happened in the past
yeah.
many times. Many yeah, exchanges
so
have been
Gox
compromised.
Mt. Gox is a famous yeah. example yeah. where I think $500 million got swiped by hackers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And all the people who were holding their Bitcoins on Mt. Gox, they lost the money.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mt. Gox has declared bankruptcy, your money is gone.
Hmm. Yeah.
So that's the risk of doing it online, but the advantage is much easier. You
yeah.
don't have to worry about transfers or how
or
to
maintaining
hold it.
Your own wallet right. at home, where you know,
yeah, I mean, if you just yeah. have maybe whatever 500 rupees disposable
yeah.
income at some point, you threw it into Bitcoin, you don't care
right.
What happens to it, then maybe you know, an exchange is probably the simplest
yeah.
thing to do. But I don't think I would honestly want to recommend that
yeah.
for anybody.
If you're learning to get into Bitcoin, I think it is recommended that you learn how to take it offline,
take
and
it
keep
offline,
it
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
So, Akhil, can you like briefly like
so,
explain how it works?
So
getting
the easiest
it offline?
Way to get an offline Bitcoin wallet is to download the original Bitcoin client.
Hmm.
You can generate as many addresses as you want through it. Send your money to these addresses and it sits on your computer.
So can you do this on your phone or on your...
You could do it on your phone, but it's very, very risky because losing a phone is much easier than
hmm.
losing a computer.
Hmm.
So, you know, someone will swipe your phone, it'll fall in the toilet or something will happen
yeah.
and you know,
and
you'll lose that money.
Yeah, I think an important point to consider here is that Bitcoin money is like cash.
Yeah.
So if you lose it, it's gone. You cannot go to your bank or your credit
yeah.
card company and say there was an unauthorized transaction or this is the money I used to have. I'm not able to find it. It's like cash. Gone
yeah, so
and
some,
it's gone forever.
Some
yeah.
exchanges have had fraud happening and
right.
then they have bothered to like refund the money to people. But in many cases, the money is just
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, if it's a big hack online, it's gone. So
yeah.
so this is the consideration that you will have to make.
Yeah.
Mm.
If you keep it online, you have to trust the security of that exchange. And if they get hacked, your money is
gone.
You cannot go to anyone
correct.
Else.
Hmm.
If you're not confident of them, you can store it offline. But then the worry is that if you
yeah.
lose your
the
laptop...
The onus is on you to make sure you've taken proper backups of your wallet.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Stored it in places where, you know, you can always recover it from. And, you know, take care
yeah.
of your money like it's
so,
real money. So.
There have been cases where, like, people have accidentally formatted their computer
yeah,
without realizing
exactly.
that
yeah.
the
yeah.
entire Bitcoin
like, I remember I used to have... a mining operation back in 2011, if
yeah.
I may say so. I don't know where it is. I
yeah.
don't
how
remember
many,
which
how many
computer.
Bitcoins did you have?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it wasn't hard to get them back then. So,
yeah.
And I think I did mine for about a month or so before I gave up on it. So,
yeah.
Who knows?
So,
if
yeah.
they're lying somewhere.
You could have been a millionaire right now.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Probably a few thousandaires. So.
Yeah, I never know. When Akhil goes home and he suddenly discovers in an old box some
yeah.
laptop is lying and he's a billionaire.
He will not appear on the podcast
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's the story with a lot of people who didn't put too much stock in Bitcoin and probably did it as a hobby or to learn what it is or to understand what it is.
Hmm.
And they forgot about their money in various wallets or... you know, on the
yeah,
computers.
I mean, today there was a tweet on if you had $1,000 invested in Bitcoin 7 years ago, it would be worth like $160 million or something.
Which
yeah.
is insane. But who could have thought
yeah.
7 years ago a
no, but
digital
also,
currency.
The flip side is that if you had invested $1,000 in Bitcoin, I'm sure you wouldn't treat that as
yeah.
like something that will make you so much money. So it could be kept like on a hard drive you didn't
yeah.
care about. And it's there's quite a possibility you would have lost
yeah.
it. So.
But the
now
options
now
for like hardware
valuable,
wallets.
So you have to
yeah.
really consider how you store
yeah.
your money.
Yeah, so there are hardware wallets such as one by Trezor. Again,
yeah.
not an endorsement, but that's
yeah.
one we came
it's
across.
It's one of the most popular ones
yeah.
at
yeah.
least
so
out there.
So if you keep it offline, there are many levels
hmm.
of how you keep it offline. So one could be on just a software on your computer.
Right.
It just stores your addresses of
right.
how much Bitcoin
but
you
that
have.
Is also easy to compromise if your computer gets compromised by malware,
yeah.
viruses.
Hmm.
There are many
so
out there targeting
yeah.
actually Bitcoin wallets.
So it's gone.
Yeah.
The other way is that you don't keep it on your computer, but you then transfer it to a hardware wallet, which is like a USB device. in a way, it's safer because that hardware device should not get infected by malware.
Yeah.
It protects your Bitcoins from anything external threat. But the worry of losing that USB is as much as, and maybe more than losing your laptop. So that's the second worry with the hardware.
Yeah, so recently there was a story in Wired, the link I will share in the show notes, where a person had mined, I think, or bought 7.4 bitcoins a long time ago. And that was worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, over $30,000 or something like that.
But that was with a Trezor. They had stored it on a Trezor.
Yeah, he stored it on a Trezor and then he forgot the password to that Trezor. And, you know, even the backup key he had not stored it anywhere. So after a lot of like harrowing moments where every day of his life, every moment of his life, he was thinking my bitcoin is gone, and then finally he managed to like hack that Trezor via some hacker he met on Telegram or something, and like flashed it.
Interesting story, you should read it.
And you know, like tried to get that money back. So I'll put the link in the show notes. You know, things like that can easily happen if you decide to store it offline, which is why, you know, for some people, it may be just a better idea to like put a small amount online. But if you're putting a big sum, then, you know, the standard security advice.
Just like any money, it's also advisable to put it in multiple places and not keep all your like cash, so to say, the proverbial eggs in one place.
Yeah. Right. So other than Bitcoin, there are a bunch of other currencies as well. We are not suggesting that you buy only Bitcoin. Yeah, you know, similarly, there's Ethereum, Litecoin.
Yeah, they all come under this whole macro group called cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. Cryptocurrencies,
Basically, there's using new currencies coming out to mine them, cryptography to exchange.
Yeah.
So they're part of that.
Yeah, from our end, at least, like the only thing we'll suggest is that if something is a really new cryptocurrency, then unless you know everything about it, and you probably know
even
that it
can be. Everything about it, it's best to avoid it till there's some traction
on
ground.
like we started by saying, the value of a Bitcoin is because people determine its value is X. Newer cryptocurrencies may be backed by big groups, and then their value will be much more over the period of time. If the backers go away, it will be zero. So Bitcoin and Ethereum they are the most popular cryptocurrencies right now. But again, the future is dependent on what people feel.
So we will be back with another episode on Bitcoin at some point in the future, maybe around the time the Supreme Court announces it.
Yeah, that would be a great time to do it.
Yeah, so we'll be following this closely and getting you more information on this topic. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Gadgets360. And we will be back with another episode of Orbital next week. And just one more time before we close this episode, let me tell you that whatever we said on this episode was not financial advice. Please do not take it as anything to do with how you should invest your money. This is just a primer on what is Bitcoin and why there is so much of a fuss about it. Thank you so much for listening.